Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This show is for college recruiting fans.
What a run! He's got a lane!
The inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. Recruiting with Andrew Nemec. Brought to you each Thursday at 7 p.m. by Power Rents. Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080.
Hoo-wee.
The Fan.
Hello and welcome to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. We've been doing a lot of football talk lately. Last week, we talked NFL and basically didn't talk recruiting. We will talk recruiting today, and it seems somewhat fitting that we have to switch gears a little bit to start the show away from football, because not only is the NBA fully in gear now, first two basketball games of the year, well, of the return going on right now, Lakers lead the Clippers 33-23 at the end of the first quarter, but we have big basketball news in the state of Oregon and in with recruiting in the state of Oregon. And me personally, and I've talked about this on the show, basketball in the state of Oregon, high school basketball has been really down. And as great as Peyton Pritchard was and as great as he turned into at Oregon, he won four state titles and was the three-time player of the year in the state of Oregon. Yes, he was great, but he didn't win four state titles and three state player of the year awards because he was so unbelievably transcendent. Part of it was the talent in the state was really down. And again, I'm not taking anything away from Peyton Pritchard, but Peyton Pritchard as a freshman point guard who was at the time right around 6 feet tall shouldn't have been clearly at times the best player on the floor throughout the state tournament as a freshman in high school. There should have been somebody else. And there are definitely years in the state of Oregon where there are multiple good prospects in multiple classes so that it doesn't matter how good a freshman is, he's not the best player in the state. Look at the situation right now with Jefferson. Jefferson has a freshman, Marquise, which is it's really weird for me to call him Marquise. He goes by Mookie. Mookie Cook is the number five player in the country in the class of 2023, and he is not the best player in the state of Oregon. It's rare for a freshman to be the best player in the state. It takes the state being pretty down. But Mookie Cook is a really, really good one and could end up eventually going pro. He's the number straight out of high school because he'll be allowed to. Number five prospect in the nation as a freshman. He's incredible. But he's not the best player in the state because the state of Oregon is kind of on the rise in basketball. Nathan Biddle is at a Crater. He's 6'10", 180 pounds. Got to put on weight. There's some bull going on there in terms of the body shape. But he's the number nine prospect in the nation. He's cutting his list down to a top four on Friday. Not only is Oregon expected to make the top four for him, but Oregon is the presumed leader in his recruitment. Again, the number nine player in the nation, the number two center in the nation. And he's not the only elite prospect in the state of Oregon. Because Ben Gregg out of Clackamas is the number 60 prospect in the nation, and he's trending up. 6'8", 6'9", power forward. Think Trace Tinkle. He's a lot like Trace Tinkle. I think he's a little more explosive. I'm not sure if he's as good a shooter, but a little bit more explosive, a little bit better athlete than Trace. Perhaps not as good a shooter, but a better lower post player. Ben Gregg, I had a chance to talk to today after his virtual visit with Tony Bennett and Virginia, and he's starting to trim his list, and he might commit in the next month. Ben Gregg has, throughout his entire recruitment, talked about kind of the same schools. And unfortunately, for the last 6 months, even though he had a monster junior year, Nathan Biddle's the number nine player in the country. Mookie Cook's the number five player in the country. Neither of them was the Gatorade Player of the Year. the Gatorade Player of the Year went to Ben Gregg. Ben Gregg has been on the rise in a big way in the last 6 to 8 months, but he can't take any other official or unofficial visits because the NCAA has declared an emergency dead period in response to coronavirus. So his recruitment really hasn't picked up a ton in terms of new schools. But the schools that are in on him have cranked it up, except for one. And we'll get to that. He talked about Arizona. Arizona is one of the schools that's definitely in the mix. He's talked about Gonzaga for a number of years, and Mark Few hasn't offered. Gonzaga's in it for a number of five-star guys and just went, you know what? We're not sure. And Ben Gregg finally says, hey, I'm committing in the next month. You guys haven't offered. You're kind of out of it. So Gonzaga's out, I think. At least for now, they're out. I think if they offered, he'd have to think about it. But I think they're mostly out. Oregon is in the mix. He likes Dana Altman. He likes the program. He likes the Nike connections. He likes what they could do for him after basketball. And he likes that Oregon is 2 hours away from home and his family could see his games. Oregon State, we'll get to, because that's really the crux of what I want to talk about today. And then he had the virtual visit with Virginia. Shares a lot in common with Tony Bennett in terms of religion. They share a very similar faith and a very similar philosophy about faith. So they have a very close relationship. And Virginia is the reigning national champion because they didn't crown one last year. So you have to go back a couple or 2 years now, two seasons. And that was actually Virginia. So they're the reigning national champ. So Arizona very much in it. Gonzaga's kind of backed away in terms of mutual parting of ways between Ben Gregg and Gonzaga. Oregon, Virginia, and then Oregon State. I wrote a story, it was maybe a year ago, that Oregon State was Ben Gregg's leader. That at the time, he was still a top 100 kid in the nation. And he said, I see myself playing a Trace Tinkle role. I'm close with the Tinkle family. I go to the Oregon State games. I'm close with them. I talked to him today, and he said Oregon State doesn't really reach out and communicate as much anymore. So Oregon State is definitely not his leader, and they've kind of scaled back. Now, he stopped short of saying that they weren't among his leaders. They're in the mix for him along with Arizona, Oregon, and Virginia. Cal and Virginia Tech are kind of trailing there. They make up kind of an unofficial top six. And Oregon State is somewhere probably in the middle of that. But it brought up an interesting point because he said Oregon State just basically doesn't talk to me as much anymore. They don't reach out. I talk to Arizona every day via text message. I talk to Coach Miller 2 to 3 times a week over the phone. I talk to Oregon a ton. I just had another virtual visit with Virginia. I've had a number of virtual visits with Virginia. It was like, how are things with Oregon State? Well, I don't talk to him very much. And I think people say, how can that happen? How can it happen for a top 60 player in the nation? How can it happen for an elite recruit that communication breaks down? And I'm not talking specifically in this case. I'm talking in general. I don't care if it's football, baseball, basketball. I've run into this a number of times. And I think the average fan thinks there's an obvious way to recruit a kid. And the simple truth is there isn't. There just isn't. You talk to, and I've had a Pac-12 coach tell me this in football and in basketball. I don't know how some programs can talk to a kid every day. We don't know what to talk about every day. And you can say, how could you not know? And I also talk to people who say, yeah, I agree with that. How in the world could you talk to a high school kid every day? What are you doing? Well, you're not necessarily pitching them recruiting talk all the time. You might text them a GIF. You might text them, you see LeBron's dunk. Incredible. And it might be a football recruit. You just build the relationship. So you end up talking about maybe how things are going with their 2K game, how things are going with Madden, Fortnite, not just video games. You might be talking to them about school. You might be talking with them about highlights. You definitely, I know a lot of coaches during the football season, talk to them about the NFL. You see that catch by Julio. You see Julio's touchdown grab. You see Mike Evans' touchdown grab.
Do they talk to him about girls?
You know, I don't think as much.
Why not?
Because I just think that's potentially a weird area.
What if the recruit calls up and they're like, I got this problem with my girlfriend?
I think they'd listen and give some advice. And there are definitely some coaches who are almost like dads. And there are some coaches who are definitely like the inappropriate uncle. And every coach kind of has a different personality.
But see, if I was a coach, I'd find myself in a pretty sticky situation there. I would be...
Pun intended?
Like, yeah, I don't want to say anything. Because everything else, like school, is kind of... I don't know, you can give pretty, you know, pretty broad advice. It doesn't really offend either way. Unless you're just like, oh, yeah, dude, drop the books. Who cares?
Well, I think some coaches, and I think Mark Helfrich was like this. And I'm not saying Wayne Tinkle is or isn't like this. I'm just saying this is what I've seen with coaches sometimes when there's been a communication breakdown. Sometimes it's, yeah, we talk to him about how he'd fit in the system. We talk to him every couple weeks about how things are going with his family and how things are going with school or how things are going with the summer. And then we're out of things to talk about. And then there are other coaches, and I think Oregon's football staff does a phenomenal job of this, that they keep up the relationship all the time. All the time they keep up the relationship. And I learn as a reporter who to talk to, right? With Kingsley Suamataia, who we'll get to in the next segment, he's ready to commit in a couple weeks. Talking to his dad in his recruitment is important. His dad is one of those people who knows what's going on in his recruitment. Mom, still helpful, not the same. His dad is very influential in his life. With Ben Gregg, Ben Gregg's dad's very influential in his life. With Keith Brown, it was his mom. And we had Sarah in studio with Keith for a whole show. And Sarah said Oregon was the only staff. Keith Brown is an All-American. So it's not like schools weren't interested. It's not like schools weren't recruiting him. At the time he committed to Oregon, he was listed as the number one inside linebacker in the nation. So it's not like schools weren't interested. And she said, Oregon was the only school that tried to talk to me. How does that happen? I hear that all the time. How does that happen for people? How in the world does that happen? It's because you're dealing with football coaches. They're not psychologists. They're not high school kids. They're not college kids. Sometimes they're only focused on winning now and their team now. I can't imagine Nick Saban going way out of his way to talk to mom.
Well, but they're parents in themselves. You think they would try to draw some empathy on that.
And I think some staffs do. But I also think that we miss it and we assume recruiting is so simple. Just talk to the kid. Just get to know the kid. And it's way more layered than that. I know there are a lot of parents who probably are thinking, man, it is really hard to relate to my high school son right now. All he wants to do, like my son, all he wants to do is play 2K, play Fortnite. He goes outside and plays basketball. He shops online for stuff, for sports gear. He talks to his buddies about different shoes. I happen to be into some of that stuff, so I can talk to him about it. There are a lot of parents who, there's just a disconnect when you start talking about 2K and Galaxy Opal LeBron and how much he's worth in 2K. Galaxy Opal KD out of position point guard card is worth like 5 million coins in, or 5 million MT.
Well, what the hell are they supposed to talk to him about? Income tax?
Right, well, my point
yeah,
is
that's pretty cool about LeBron, but did you see the increase you got on your county taxes?
My point being that I think some coaches have a hard time with building that relationship outside of football and like, here's what our school offers. Here's what we bring to the table. We'll sell what we bring to the table to mom and dad. And then that's it. If you want to go here, you want to go here. And I think that's a really old school way of looking at it. I think there are a lot of coaching staffs who do a great job of like, dude, can you believe this burger I just ordered? It's huge. And that sounds stupid, but keeping that dialogue going all the time and having that relationship matters. And a lot of coaches who go, I don't text a ton for my relationships. I don't do a lot of that for my relationships talking to people. I talk to them on the phone when I want to talk on the phone. That generation isn't doing as well on the recruiting trail.
Well, I was just thinking about it too, that like, it makes sense that 18-year-olds would be into that kind of stuff of like, bro, check this out. Check out this huge burger. Oh my gosh, check out this new car or, you know, whatever. I think about myself and it's like, if you texted me that, you were like, bro, check out this big burger I'm about to eat. I would legitimately be thrown off. I'd be like, why are you texting me that?
Yeah.
I feel like you and I have a good relationship, but that would throw me off enough that the next time I saw you in person, I'd be like, what was the purpose of that?
Well, it's an example.
But like, I'm going off your example. I think you're right, because I think 18-year-olds do that kind of stuff.
They just text
each other stupid things out of the blue. And maybe that's some whimsy that I've lost in older age, that texting each other food or check this out.
I mean, that's a whole nother topic. About,
like, if somebody's going to text me, it's got to be a purpose.
Okay.
Or it's my wife telling me I did something wrong.
Really?
Yeah.
That's it?
She's like, why didn't you do that?
Oh, I text a lot. But
oh,
I
really?
I text the recruits a lot.
Do you text your kids, like, funny stuff? Or are you always parenting on your text?
Parenting.
See, you got to change it up. Why don't you take notes from your recruiting and start sending some gifts?
I have a 2-year-old and then a 15-year-old stepson who lives in a dungeon. So his thing is like, what do you want for dinner? I'm going to grab food because I don't feel like cooking. And then he texts up like, grab Chick-fil-A for me. That's what goes on a lot via text.
See, dude, I'm just saying, take that chance and text him like a cat gif and see what happens.
Come to take a look at this crap I just took.
Hey, I need to talk to you up here. Like, you need to get over here now.
Dude, check this out.
Bro, this is sick.
You know what I mean. Come on.
I do, but I think it is kind of an interesting take on that.
I think there are two different kinds
of getting into the mind of an 18-year-old.
And that's my point, is it's harder than people think. I think people just assume recruiting is pretty easy. Sell the kid, make him feel important. It's like, how do you do that? And I'm telling you, kids now want to be able to have that relationship with their coach where they can text them burger. I mean, I'm not just saying burgers, but you know what I mean? Like, hey, Coach Cristobal, did you see that catch from Julio? Yeah, man, that was amazing. Did you see Quentin Nelson's block? Oh my goodness.
They want
that.
A friend. They want a friend.
Yes. There's more of that now than before. And when you're just the coach role, and here's how we'd use you, here's how you'd fit in on campus, that works. It does. That works too. It's not as consistently as effective as honestly creating that access where you become friends. It's a different thing. It's just a different thing. So Ben Gregg's going to announce his decision in the next month or so, he says. I have no take on it. I don't know if he has a take on it. I think Arizona, Oregon, and Virginia are right there. When somebody tells me a month before they're going to commit that their relationship has deteriorated with the school, I'm not picking that school, but Oregon State is in it. I think there's still time to fix that. So I think it's those four schools. One of the things that was interesting, certainly in Oregon's favor, was Ben talking about the fact that potentially he could play alongside Nathan Biddle, the number 9 recruit in the nation. They've talked about playing together. And they both have Arizona and Oregon on their list of schools, but Biddle is largely considered as close to a lock to Oregon as you can get with a kid who hasn't really named a favorite. Oregon is expected to be the pick for Nathan Biddle. So if they do want to play together, there is a, hey, we're close to home, we're the Oregon boys, we could both go there. Instead of being rivals, we could pair together. And that, I think, is a small help in Oregon's favor, but by no means do I think Oregon's the favorite in this one. I don't know who's the favorite. And again, I don't know if Ben Gregg knows who's the favorite. I do know who's the favorite in a major, major commitment that's coming up that involves the Oregon Ducks. And we'll talk about who that is and what Oregon's chances are next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
Somebody on the text line, the fan text line, is saying, don't kids like Pokemon? 503-250-1080.
Not sure kids like Pokemon anymore too much. Really?
Don't think so.
I'm not sure high school kids are rocking. I know Braden Lindsay was a Pokemon Go player a little bit. I dabble. But I don't know how many kids play Pokemon Go. I don't think that's the meeting spot. I don't think, like, yo, I've got 5 Charizards. I don't think you're, like, definitely getting a 5-star kid or 5-star recruit because you've got those 5 Charizard cards or whatever they are.
How old are you?
I am 34.
34. I'm 32. So you and I grew up in the age of Pokemon, original Pokemon hysteria.
Okay, yes.
Like, right, late 90s. Early 2000s.
I was middle school.
Yeah.
So we were kind of not.
Okay.
We were past it.
Okay.
But
like, isn't it interesting to you that fad came back around? I think that's kind of interesting.
Do you remember?
It came back around in, like, a legitimate way, not in, like, a kid's way, like a way that, like, adults like you and I, like, got into it.
Yes.
We're like, oh, this is kind of fun.
It's true. It is weird. There are things like that. Like Ninja Turtles is kicked back up and they did go away. They made the movies again. They made the cartoon again. The one that hasn't is Beanie Babies. Do you remember how big the craze was for Beanie Babies?
Yeah.
Like different ones were worth, like there was a Tabasco and it was a red bowl and he was worth like $1,000.
Yeah.
And now, like, if you had Tabasco, people would be like, okay, cool. Who cares?
You have a what?
I'll give you $5. Tabasco definitely was one of the, he was a bull, he was a red bull, and he was worth a bunch of money. There were two bulls, and one was rare, and one wasn't, and the rare one was worth a lot of money.
Somebody's 32 on the text line, and they're saying, I'm playing Pokemon Go right now.
There you go.
Yeah, see, I think it's interesting that you have these kind of fads that happen where, as a kid, you know, they blow up, and then somehow the brand manager or company figures out, like, a timeline at which they can get you again.
They must.
I feel like that's what this is. Like, they did this with, you're totally right about Ninja Turtles, by the way, that, like, they did this with Ninja Turtles where they got us hooked on the toys and everything, and then we lost interest, and then Michael Bay made a couple movies about it, and we were like, okay, let's go watch the movie.
Right.
Not that I go to Michael Bay movies or anything.
It worked. Michael Bay sucks.
Explosions.
Yeah. I can't. I'm out on Michael Bay.
Dude, guy makes money.
Good for him.
I can respect directors who know what they make. Is like the Fast and Furious movies.
Yeah, I was just gonna say yes.
It's like they are legitimately crappy movies, but I've been to two of them because they're just purely entertaining.
Oh, I've never been to one. I've seen them on TV. I like the first one a lot, and I kind of like the second one. And that I think, and then there's Tokyo Drift, and I'm totally out. And then I've seen 3 and 4, I think, but I'm out.
You never saw 7, the one where they had robot Paul Walker in the last 10 minutes?
No.
Or CGI Is Paul Walker? Real? Yeah, because
no,
he died,
not
bro.
Robot Paul Walker. I know he died. They didn't have robot Paul Walker.
Well, it's not robot. It's CGI Paul Walker. They had to have him.
Okay.
It's like the movie The Crow.
Bro, we're talking a totally different level of thing if you have robot actors. Like, you're about to blow my mind. Like, they built a robot of an actor, and he made it through a scene, and it looked normal.
And somehow we're talking he's hotter than Paul Walker.
We're talking about robotics that I don't think exist yet. You've seen those, like, the dog ones that can do, like, flips, and they come from MIT. So if you're telling me there's a Paul Walker, and it's, like, Westworld already, my mind is completely blown.
Well, it wouldn't be that ridiculous.
CGI, I believe.
2020, bro.
2020, bro.
Somebody else, Teletubbies come back. I'm calling the game. Taking a long walk into the desert.
Teletubbies.
You remember Teletubbies?
Yeah, Tinky Winky was one. Is that right?
Oh, man. See, I don't even remember them that much.
Okay. I mean, that's as far as
I go. You must have been a big telehead.
Is that what they were called?
That's what they called them, Ned.
Telehead? Yeah.
Telehead?
I don't think that's
You follow them on tour, go to them stadium tours?
I don't think that's a real thing. I think that's a real thing.
I think you should type it into Google and see what happens on the work computer.
I'm not going
to. Not your personal one. It won't work. Okay. Do the work computer.
No, not going to do it. As unpredictable, just like this opening has been, as unpredictable as the class of 2021, 2020, the year 2020 has really affected the 2021 recruiting cycle because nobody could take visits. And then at the same time, and I've talked to this about a number of recruiting experts or talked about this with a number of recruiting experts, it's been the most predictable year ever in recruiting. This has been the easiest year ever to predict where recruits are going. And how who's going to go to what school. We had Kevin Wade on from 24/7 who covers the Ducks, and we were just kind of comparing notes on the air. And we literally do this before the signing period of the previous class. So this was last December. We always kind of try to roughly map out the next year's group. So this December, we'll roughly try to map out the entire 2022 class together just for fun. And we'll each have our lists, and here's where this guy's going. Of the guys that Oregon has committed, other than they're probably going to have to take an edge rusher from outside the West. We didn't know the exact name, but just they'll take an edge rusher outside the West. They'll get a long edge rusher. They're going to maybe Brandon Buckner. We predicted the names of almost every single one of Oregon's commits so far. And the guys that we didn't know were guys like, you know, Terrell Tillman, who's a Texas three-star edge rusher, who were like, they'll take an edge rusher from somewhere. There probably isn't one on the West Coast. They'll grab somebody from somewhere else in the country. To a man, one of the guys we've predicted and said was an absolute lock was Kingsley Suamataia, the Adidas All-American Bowl offensive tackle. He'd be the second highest rated commit in Oregon's class behind Troy Franklin, the five-star wide receiver, and one spot ahead of Ty Thompson, the quarterback out of Arizona, who was the standout of the Elite 11 quarterback camp. He's big time. He's finally making his decision. He hasn't set a date. It was reported by ESPN 960 that he plans to commit in the next couple of months or next couple of weeks. It's coming. He released a top seven, and I have to be honest, I've seen top fives where there's a school or two and you go, there's no way that kid's going to that school. He picked that school because they're an in-state school. He picked that school because of a relationship he has with a coach. But very rarely does a guy release a top list and you go, there's zero chance he goes anywhere but one school. Kingsley's top seven is wild because the rumors were potentially Georgia could get in the mix. He could take a visit to Alabama, Clemson, or LSU and be blown away by those programs and could really see himself potentially not going to Oregon because of those programs. He's not going to Arkansas. He's not going to Utah State. He's not going to BYU. He's not going to Utah. He's definitely not going to Virginia. I have no idea why Virginia was on the list. And he's not real high on USC. Like, if I was going to make a list and you said, what's Kingsley's top seven going to be?
I would have only gotten Oregon right, probably. The other schools would have all been wrong for me. Because all the way through, he had the same collection of a handful of schools that everybody thought was in it. And then he releases this top seven, and it's Oregon and six schools. I was like, what? I mean, truly, I saw that list and went, well, he's ready to make a decision. Sure enough, a couple weeks later, he announces he's ready to make a decision. That I would be floored if he didn't choose Oregon. Where I think I'd be more floored than USC fans were when DeAnthony Thomas chose Oregon, because at least he took a visit. If Kingsley were to somehow not choose Oregon in a couple weeks, it would be the most shocking commitment I've covered.
Watch him get a call, a personal call from Darren McFadden, and just go, oh, Arkansas.
I mean, I guess. I mean, this is a kid who's had a close relationships. He's close with the Sewell family. He's an offensive tackle. I mean, when somebody goes into your living room and is like, well, okay, how do you do with offensive tackles that have come out of the state of Utah that have my build? It's like, well, you met Panay? He's like, oh yeah, we're very, very close and we work out together in the offseason. It's like, ask him how things go. Mario Cristobal's been the primary recruiter for Kingsley. He's made it a personal mission to recruit that kid. Kingsley has been arguably his number one target in this class for about a year. I think there's no question, none, that Kingsley's choosing Oregon at this point. And I would have said, if Georgia, if Alabama, if Clemson, if LSU, if any of those schools were on there, I'd say, well, maybe he falls in love with the idea of playing somewhere else. But with the schools that are on there, they're all West region schools except for Arkansas and Virginia. And he's not going to Arkansas or Virginia. So Kingsley will be a Duck. Oregon jumps back into the number three spot with Kingsley in the fold. And oh my goodness, what an offensive line class. Fine, it was predictable. Fine, it's what we all expected. Doesn't change the fact that it's really, really impressive. They got four offensive linemen in this class if they get Kingsley, and the air quotes here, the worst one is Jonah Miller, who had 20 offers, and he's a forced consensus four-star prospect. Then you've got Under Armour All-American Jackson Light, who went from being a borderline top 10 center to going to a couple of camps and becoming arguably the number one center in the country in the rankings. He's in the top three, according to almost everybody. Then you've got Bram Walden. Bram Walden's out of Arizona. Arizona and Arizona State are doing better in recruiting. Arizona State keeps flexing their muscles that they're suddenly recruiting the state of California better than anybody else in the nation, which is laughable, but okay, you know, you got to flex on something. You got to build a brand on something. Meanwhile, Oregon goes in the back door and steals a bunch of Arizona's best prospects, including Ty Thompson, an elite quarterback, and Bram Walden, who's an Adidas All-American tackle. And he comes out of the West region as a tackle that produces none of them. It is almost impossible to find five high-caliber tackles in the entire West region. And Oregon goes and plucks Bram Walden out of Arizona like it was nothing. And it's not nothing. He's really, really good. So you get Bram Walden, Jackson Light, Jonah Miller, and Kingsley. And you're also going after Bryce Foster, who is one of the top 10 recruits in the nation as a guard, which should tell you how dominant he is. I don't know if Oregon's going to get him because they got to get him on campus for a visit, but he's a track guy, so Oregon's got the in there. That's potentially helpful, so we'll see. But even if you don't get him, in a year where the offensive linemen aren't good on the West Coast, Oregon's going to get four four-star linemen and three All-Americans. That is unbelievable. The job that Mario Cristobal's doing specifically with offensive line recruits is some of the best work I've seen. It's incredible. Year in, year out. He's been at Oregon, what, 4 or 5 years? And he's landed the number one junior college offensive lineman, three of them. He's landed the best prospect, offensive line prospect in the West region twice. And he's landed multiple All-Americans two or three times. It's unbelievable. I want to get to Oregon State. We talked about predictable. Things have been very predictable, but great for Oregon. And I said about a year ago, Oregon's class of 2021 is going to be their best class they've ever gotten. And that's where we're at. They have the number four class in the nation. When they get Kingsley, it'll be number three. They're doing a marvelous job. Oregon State's doing a lot better. Also quite predictable. They only have a few spots left. I'll tell you what they're looking like, where they're headed potentially for their last few spots next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. Oregon State taking a really small class this year. And I'm not sure Oregon State fan, I'm not sure Beaver Nation is totally prepared for where they're going to be in the rankings, because most teams are going to sign between 20 and 25 guys. Oregon State's almost definitely not signing more than 15. And it's very, very possible they sign 12 or 13. And that's not because they did anything wrong. It's because they don't have a lot of graduating seniors. So they're almost certain to finish 11th or 12th in the Pac-12 standings because everyone else is going to sign multiple prospects more than them. They have 9 commitments. They might only sign 3 more guys. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. You got off to a great start. You get a guy like Easton Mascarenhas, the highest rated high school defensive prospect the school's ever gotten. You get Demir Collins, the number 2 running back commit in program history behind only Steven Jackson. And that turned out quite well. And you got Sam Vidlak, who at the time there were people, and I disagreed with this, but there was a time when people thought, oh, they couldn't get anybody and they settled for the in-state kind of sleeper 3-star guy. But since then, even if you felt that way, you were proven wrong because Sam Vidlak's in the discussion for 4-star status and was one of the highest risers in the nation at the quarterback position in the most recent 24/7 sports rankings update. Sam Vidlak's got a chance to be a 4-star prospect on signing day, and that would give him 3 of them. Quarterback, running back, middle linebacker, 4 stars. That's how you get better. But not a lot left with 9 commitments. In fact, I broke it down. Based on who's graduating, based on the depth chart, it looks like they're going to sign 1 or 2 more offensive linemen. And Dylan Rollins is really the guy to watch there. I think Oregon State's in really good shape to get Dylan Rollins. If they can get Jordan Mokko, they'll take him. A junior college prospect out of Snow College. He just picked up an offer from Ole Miss. He's starting to be a national recruit. When Oregon State first offered him, I thought there was maybe a chance. Now he's being recruited by 20, 30 programs, including the SEC. I think that's probably a battle they won't win. It's possible, but I don't think so. And they got to sign multiple DBs. I don't know if they sign 3 DBs. I don't know if it's 2 DBs, but they're going to have to sign a couple of defensive backs because they're losing some talent there. And then I think from there, you maybe take a wide receiver. You maybe take an X-factor guy if you can get a 4-star prospect that's a big-time prospect. And then you rely on transfers. And if you'd have told me a year ago, they're going to get Demir Collins, they're going to get Sam Vidlak, they're going to get Easton Mascarenhas, Henry Buckles, the Hood River Valley offensive lineman, and then they're going to have to finish up trying to find some offensive linemen and DBs, I'd have said, yep, that pretty much sounds like how it goes for the Beavers every year. They get a handful of pretty good in-state guys. Under Coach Smith, things have gotten a little bit better, so they probably land a pretty good prospect outside the state, and they really, really, really struggle recruiting offensive linemen, so they always struggle late trying to find them. And they need a DB, so that's going to be their battle because you need 3 or 4 of them in a class. Anytime you need 3 or 4 in one class, it becomes something that's going to take a while. So the Beaver did about what I expected, and that's a good thing. It's a step forward. Again, probably going to finish 11th or 12th in the rankings, and that's okay. Because they might only sign 13 guys and then sign 4 potential impact transfers. Will, you are so, you're a Beaver fan. You played there. And you are so much more interested in the Lakers-Clippers game. 54-52, the Lakers lead the Clippers at halftime. And you're way more interested in that. And I don't really blame you.
Well, it what am I supposed to do?
It's so nice that basketball is back.
Basketball's
honestly,
back. Sports is back.
Do we really feel like, the NBA kind of sort of intentionally made the player pool a lot bigger to kind of shut Damian Lillard up about we need a chance to be in the playoffs and in the hopes that Zion makes the playoffs? Is that what this was about? Instead of just saying, let's start with the playoffs and do 8 teams, which made a lot more sense, to be honest.
I think that you were in a really... Well, I wouldn't call it unique because it was kind of the same way last year in the Western Conference with 3 through 8 seed was that it was all just kind of a toss up. And I think you had that situation here again this season where, you know, most teams conceivably still either could get in the playoffs or move up 2 to 3 spots in a playoff ranking with just a couple of wins. So I think from the NBA standpoint, they saw that and they said, well, why the hell wouldn't we play these other games? I don't think it's about fairness because that goes out the window with college. I think once you get out of, no, I mean, really though, like once you get out of college sports, all the, you know, the fair is fair kind of crap,
right,
that goes out the window. This is a product they're trying to sell. And I think they looked at those last games and go, I think people will watch these because there's a lot on the line and that's good for ratings. So let's have them play.
I think the other piece, and I think LeBron talked about this, is not wanting to jump directly into playoffs, wanting a few live action counting games in the regular season before it really, really matters. And so I think that this was a really good compromise for both ends of the spectrum, right? The teams in the 1 and 2 seeds are like, yeah, we've got our playoff spot locked up. Not that home court matters anymore, but we've got the 1s and 2 seeds locked up. But the bigger thing for us is we'd like 5, 6, 7 games that really count before we get to the playoffs so that it doesn't really, really matter with a lot on the line before we get started. On the flip side, you got teams like the Pelicans and the Blazers who are going, hey, we'd still like to fight for a playoff spot. And maybe the Blazers make it, and it helped today that the Pelicans lost, right? Ended up losing to the Jazz 106-104. So they're now...
Hell yeah!
That's a half a game different. Tomorrow the Blazers play the Grizzlies, right?
That's right.
How much does that game matter to you in your household? I know it matters. How much does it matter to you personally? Like, if they lose that game, are you going to be bummed out for the day? Do you not care? Where do you stand with that?
I think with sports being back as it is, I'm kind of just along for the ride.
Yeah.
I'm not really putting a lot of stock in the Trailblazers this season because I am, and if you listen to my Saturday show, I am a huge detractor from this whole idea that they still have a chance of winning the title. It's ridiculous.
The Blazers?
Yeah. They don't have a chance.
Oh, no.
No, they don't. But they like to think they do, and I'm totally fine with that because they're
my team. We're on the same page. There are very few people at 1080 who are on the same page of, like, Blazer fan, generally speaking, is wildly, wildly, wildly optimistic about almost everything.
And I'm along for the ride for it.
No,
and
you're
if
not.
They lose out, I'm totally cool with it, man.
I'm on your team.
It's whatever. I'm just glad basketball is back. I'm glad some meaningful sport is finally back because, to be quite honest, I'm gonna just very slightly rip on baseball. Not only did COVID ruin baseball season, I believe, but so did the Houston Rockets. Or I'm sorry, the Houston Astros.
I was like,
I'm sorry,
hot
NBA.
Tank. Watching
the NBA on TNT. Right. Yeah, the Houston Astros ruined baseball. And I think after that, it was just like, oh, this league's cool with cheating. Well, I don't really want to watch it.
They suspended Joe Kelly longer than any of the Astros. Yeah. It's so stupid.
Yeah, it's a pathetic sport.
And it missed.
I'm sorry.
I would have loved for the Astros to have to do whatever the opposite of a victory tour is throughout all of baseball and just get booed viciously at every stop for cheating. And
the
they
opposite
they
of a victory tour.
Right? Don't you know what I'm talking about? They do like the victory tour, the victory lap, all that stuff. Champions tour.
So they have to ride on a Greyhound bus through each city.
That'd be
and
it.
Let people just pelt tomatoes at them.
Yes.
And the glass.
Shame.
Yeah.
Shame.
Shame. And the glass is a little perforated, so some of the tomato juice flies at them.
I want to talk.
They got to sit. They can't stand up. They can't like fake they're going to the bathroom once they get into the metro area. They have to sit, let the tomato juice hit them.
Which sport do you actually think would have the most legitimate champion out of the big three, NBA, baseball, football? And which one do you think is kind of like, this is a clown show, bro? We'll talk about it next on Recruiting the Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. So I know coronavirus schedule has changed everything, and crowning a college football champion is not happening. So it's really the big three that we're talking about in terms of whose season is the most legitimate, whose championship would be the most legitimate, and whose championship in your eyes would you be like, really? Who cares? And it's the NBA, Major League Baseball, and presumably the NFL. Although, to be fair, we already know what the contingency plan is for the NBA and baseball. Right now, the NFL can sit back and be like, well, we're doing our normal thing, which we all know is not going to happen because players are going to get it and have to sit out for 2 weeks, and it's going to change things dramatically. Wait until potentially Lamar Jackson gets at the middle of the season. Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson, Jimmy Garoppolo. Not that he's on that level, but the Niners would be in big trouble if they didn't have him. Wait till some of those guys are potentially out for multiple weeks, and anyone they came in contact with is out for multiple weeks, and we'll find out how legitimate the NFL season can be. I think the NBA standings are legitimate, obviously, and I think this feels like the summer league. But the games feel fairly legitimate so far, and it's a limited basis. But I kind of bought into the warm-up games, and I'm kind of buying into today. I think their champion is fairly legitimate. I know they've had to scrape some things down a little bit, but the Blazers are fighting for a playoff spot, so even the 8 seed isn't a given. You're going to have to scrap and claw for it to really earn it. I think the NBA championship is going to feel fairly legitimate. I think baseball's done. I think baseball looks foolish. I think this whole Toronto doesn't even know where they're going to play. The Toronto Blue Jays were told they can't go to Canada, and they literally are in Washington trying to figure out where to go next to play their season. The baseball season is an absolute farce. And I won't accept anything else. Anybody who says this baseball season is totally legit and it's difficult to win a championship. Who is it the Nationals that now have to play 57 games in 56 days the rest of the way because they've had so many games canceled because they were supposed to play the Marlins? It's absurd what they're doing in baseball. The baseball championship, baseball almost didn't matter anyway, sadly, because nobody pays attention. It's not how I feel. I think baseball's great. But there are a lot of people who think baseball's losing its edge with younger viewers anyway.
It is.
And now you're slamming games together and having seven inning doubleheader. Baseball's a mess.
Well, I think baseball was made all the more illegitimate, and this isn't exactly rational. I'm just saying this is how I feel, which is like the ultimate sports radio line. But the fact that baseball had such a hard go of it with contract talks leading up to this point, that like I feel like for the most part, baseball this past year has revealed who they really are. And it's a huge mishmash of things, but it goes down to three core events that have happened. The Astros, finding out the Astros cheated, and the MLB doing nothing about it.
Doing nothing. Ugh.
The coronavirus.
And having no plan. Just business having as no usual plan. And oh crap, the Marlins are out. Never mind.
Players feeling slighted by making a little less money. I think it showed on every single level.
You're right.
That the MLB is not a game of the future. It's a game of just stagnant, old, out of touch people who still believe that anyone under the age of 30 cares about baseball.
I agree completely. I think baseball has looked the worst through all this. I think the NFL has looked pretty bad over the last year. Go back about a year. Remember when Jerry Jones knelt on the field and then looked at the camera and like smirked? He didn't care about what they were kneeling for. He was kneeling at the time because there was a dispute about player empowerment and owner empowerment versus the league's dictation of what was and wasn't acceptable. And Jerry Jones was on the side of the players, in air quotes, on that situation because the league was trying to mandate league-wide what individual teams could do, and Jerry was going to give up power. He didn't care that the players were kneeling for something totally different.
Dude, Jerry
was a farce.
Dude, Jerry was light years ahead of all of them because he literally is doing what everybody should do in this situation, which is they're kneeling. Are they getting up and playing again? What's the problem?
Right. Well,
what's the issue?
That's not what he said.
Yeah.
To be fair.
But all he cares about. He goes, oh, they're going to play still and I make money? Great. I don't care.
The NFL looked bad there. The NFL not really having much of a plan for the rookies, and now the Bills all have to go home because five players got it. That's bad. And I think the NFL trying to expand the regular season when they're simultaneously telling everyone they're really deeply concerned about player health and concussions, that's terrible. And we've still yet to kind of see what they're going to do with coronavirus. The NBA looks fantastic in all this. They had player input, not just from LeBron, not just from the power players, but also, hey, you know what would be great for the league? To have a battle for the 8 seed. And then to see who gets the 8 spot, let's have the 8 play the 9. And the 8 has to win once, but the 9 has to win back-to-back games against the 8 as a play-in to earn that 8 spot. That's fantastic. They're thinking outside the box. They're putting guys in bubbles. They have shown the strength not just to make a move that the players are willing to do, except for Lou Williams because he likes them strippers and them wings, but also to include the players in that decision making. The NBA has never looked stronger than it looks right now. They're playing games that are interesting and entertaining without fans, and all the players are buying in and support what the league is doing. They've let players walk away who want to walk away. No one's getting destroyed for that. And by the way, they're coming off of a potential PR nightmare in which the awakening for everybody about coronavirus was one of their players not taking it seriously and Rudy Gobert and touching mics and being the first player to get it and shutting down an arena that was full of fans and about ready to tip off. Nobody even talks about that anymore. The time that everybody went, oh my God, coronavirus is really serious, is when the NBA pulled everyone off the court right before a game. No one even cares. It's like, well, the NBA's done a phenomenal job. That's a great job by the league to turn around what could have been a nightmare PR disaster for them into, hey, they're at the forefront. Remember, they just had a player rub the mics and then be the first professional athlete in America we all knew about that had it. We don't even talk about it.
To answer your original question, you make a great point there. To answer your original question, I would say you have to wait before you answer. The question being, which of the major sports do you view as either the least or most legitimate champion of their respective league startups? I think you have to wait because you have to see how many players and what types of players get the axe.
You're right. Like if LeBron gets sick in the finals.
Yeah, in the finals. And then,
and they're playing against the East, and then three guys from, obviously they're playing against a team from the East. Whoever it is that comes out of the East gets it, and they're out for... they're starting, three of their starters are out for five games, then we won't call it legitimate anymore.
But dude, it's so circumstantial in that respect too, because we still respect the Raptors for what they did last season, right? For beating the Warriors when they were deteriorated. No, dude,
that was cool.
I respect it because screw that team and screw Kevin Durant.
That's your best take of the day.
Nah,
that's
dude.
Better than your Mike Evans take.
Yeah.
We can't even talk about it on the air.
We can't. We're going to run out of time.
We've only got a minute.
We are running out of time, and my Mike Evans take would take a full hour.
I'm upset about it.
Legit hour.
Yeah. Okay.
Just to sum it up, Mike Evans, not that great.
Mike Evans, bad. Mike Evans,
wasn't bad.
The Buccaneers receiver is bad because he can't catch.
Let me walk back a little and say he's all right.
He's one of the top 15 receivers in the league. All right. Next week, a little recruiting, a little sports. Now that sports are back, man, I've got to talk about live sports a little bit. So we're going to do some of that. We'll talk about the Blazers a little, I'm sure. We'll also talk about the Ducks, the Beavers, and more. Thank you, as always, for listening to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. Appreciate you.
Thanks for joining us for Recruiting with Andrew Nemec, the show for college recruiting fans with the inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. Read Andrew's latest recruiting news in the Oregonian and Oregon Live, and listen for Andrew's updates throughout the week here on Portland's sports leader, 1080 The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.